That's it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
We're going to stimulate him a little bit.
Things that we've been working on. The King County Sewer Agreement, that is in your package. You see that that's been resolved. We've sent, if you remember, some time ago, Mr. Palacio was with my firm. Revised the International Building Code and put in Article 19 about revocation or suspension of a contractor's license for repeated failure to comply with town codes. We looked at that again at the request of one of the contractors. We did some research. We changed one thing so that appeals came to a Board of Appeals rather than the town council. He felt that be more due process and a fair procedure. So that's now back at the town office for review. The Smyrna Commercial Center, owned by Carriage Realty, asked us to review a maintenance agreement for approval by the town, so the property owners there would have to take care of the stormwater management pond. That's been completed. Pursuant to the last council meeting, I was asked to draft an ordinance to provide for a mathematical recount if the vote was within some small percentage. That's been completed. I hope to bring that with me tonight, but I somehow rushed out of the office without it. But Mr. Hugg will have that tomorrow. And we have done some research on the Bridgeville Ordinance, what's called the Bridgeville Ordinance. So, and I think last thing, and I may send a copy of this up to Mr. Hugg to distribute just for the members of the council. As you know, I represent the Electric Cooperative, and I get a monthly periodical called the Rural Electric Magazine. And it's a magazine that covers the rural electric industry across the United States. And they had an article that I thought was very enlightening about the wholesale power cost, how that's affecting countries from states, cities all across the nation, and really what the causes of that are. So I'll sum it up to you.
Is that
Thank
it?
You, sir.
Thank you. Chief? Mayor, you have in your packets for this evening a copy of my written report where I reviewed the 2005 statistics. We experienced about a 6% increase in the number of complaints that officers respond to that were initiated by the citizens of town. The good news is that the major crimes, assaults, robberies, and burglaries are all down. Most of the increases we've seen were in more minor nuisance-type offenses. A couple areas I am concerned about, the number of alarms that we're responding to was up 31% this year. It was up 5% last year.
Excuse me, Chief, is the number of false alarms up?
Generally speaking, Councilman, virtually all the alarms we respond to are false alarms. Maybe in that total, we may have responded to a half dozen, 10 actual alarms, so that, you know, the vast majority of them are all false alarms. And of course, a number of jurisdictions do have ordinances in place to find repeat offenders for that. The amount of time that we spend on an individual alarm is not too great, so I'm not ready yet to recommend that council do anything more about that. We're also concerned because the number of domestic complaints and what we call prevent breach of peace, those complaints are up. The prevent breach of peace is oftentimes very closely related to domestic disputes. I'm not sure what action we can take about that, but they are very time-consuming kinds of complaints for the officers. That's all I have.
Chief, if I could ask you a question, I see two pages. One is a comparison of calls for service, excluding self, and that means there were 5,900, and then there were 14,000 self-initiating services.
Yes, sir. Those are property checks, vehicle stops, those kinds of complaints. Parking enforcement, those kinds of things.
Okay. The other thing I noticed in this is the number of suicides. That was really kind of striking to me as a physician. And I was wondering if we've looked at that from the point of view of what that means to our community.
Can I add to the question?
Certainly.
What were the ages?
There was really the wide spectrum, with the vast majority in the age group you would expect. Most of them in the early 20s, we really didn't have much of a problem with juvenile suicides or anything like that. Quite frankly, with just 1 year, it could be an anomaly. I mean, if this continues, we'd have to be more concerned about it. We do work closely with the Student Wellness Center at the high school to try to head off problems with a school resource officer.
Any other questions? Thank you. Mr. Hugg?
My report is in your packet. I don't have anything to add to it.
I would like to say one thing. I see the letter by Mr. Hugg to the House Energy Committee, and I think this is a very important. I guess you're going tomorrow.
Yeah, Mr. Hill and I are.
Yes, I think Mr. Hill and you. I mean, it's a very important situation going on with our energy and the energy in the state. And I read this letter, and I think it's an excellent letter describing what our problems are for our town, but also the problems for the state and nation. And I would commend Mr. Hugg on this letter.
Any committee reports?
Yeah, I am. I hate to talk all the time. Long Range Planning Committee is meeting on a regular basis, and we're discussing the issues of the library. There was concerns among certain individuals concerning the issue of the library and the costs and that type of thing, and we're very concerned about that as well, and we're looking at alternatives to bring a regional library to Smyrna with minimal costs, I would say a la the Opera House, into our community, but we're researching any way possible we can do that. Also, we're looking at the annexations that are occurring, and they're part of the comprehensive plan, and we continue to look forward to fulfilling that plan.
Any other committee reports?
I don't have a report, but we have a finance committee meeting Wednesday, 3 o'clock.
The Public Safety Committee met last week. We're trying to schedule a meeting again for hopefully middle of next week. Is that right?
Remember, it's convenient for Mr. Jaywork.
We're discussing the sexual offender Bridgeville ordinance, as it's called. We will discuss that again next week. Did you want to make any comment, Chief?
I'd like to make – I'm sorry, I want to make extra point from the Long Range Planning Committee. We looked at the issues of traffic and the development in this community, and the westward development is bringing a lot of traffic into our town. And I remember when, you know, Main Street and Commerce Street were one or two cars sitting in a red light. Now it goes beyond – it goes beyond during the day. It's. I think that when you look at the traffic patterns, that they have to come into town if they're going north or south, unless they go the back roads. We need to suggest, and it was recommended to council, that we write a letter to our representatives in this area to provide and plan for a westward bypass that is goes north and south, so that they don't have to come into our town to go north and south. And maybe hooking into Route 1. And also, it may involve the, if we can plan it properly, the trucks from Walmart going north and south. So I would recommend the council that, our committee recommended the council that we write a letter to our representatives, Mr. Ennis, Mr. Vaughn, that we look at, strongly look at, and recommend to DelDOT that provide us with a westward road, major road, the bypass the community.
Mr. Hugg, when we added that to the comprehensive plan, what, 5 years ago, didn't we send a letter out also at that time?
We did, and DelDOT, for various reasons, declined not to continue the study of a westerly connection around town. We included that in the revised comprehensive plan that we are in the process of getting certified. But the Long Range Planning Committee felt that with the new Secretary of Transportation, it might be appropriate to bring that issue forward again. And that was, I think.
Do you need a motion, or do you just want to send a letter?
I don't think we need a motion. I mean, it's a position that you all adopted in the comp plan, so I think that we just, if you.
Send another letter. I don't hear anybody objecting.
Okay. We'll do that.
Any other committee reports? Thank you. Now's the time in the agenda for visitors to make comment. Yes. You should come up first. Can you give your name and address for the record?
Sir, good evening. My name is Terry Burrell, and I live at 193 South Main Street. I have a letter that was sent to me that I requested from Mr. Hug regarding the Board of Elections and being considered for the Board of Elections. And I have it in my hand because I decided, after reading it and deciding on the content and the intent of the letter, that I couldn't, with all clear conscience, ask for a position on the Board of Elections because I couldn't bring myself to the non-biased part of what this letter intends. I'm going to quote a section here, if I may. It says, because the Board of Elections is the sole and final judge of the conduct of the election and determines the legality of all votes offered, it is obviously important that members of the Board of Election be prepared to maintain the public trust. That is its decision, and not in any way biased in favor of any candidate. And it goes on to the first level. I'm just going to just touch on the first level, and this is part of what I'm standing here tonight for. The first level is a level of public perception. I heard about these appointments through the back door, I guess, somehow, that Mr. Evans' half-sister and Mr. Presley's full-sister are now on the Board of Elections. And I'm wondering, why didn't I send my letter in? You know, in public perception, and I'm the public, and I perceive that to be seriously biased from my own personal perception. I don't know what everybody else thinks, but as soon as I heard that, I was pretty upset. And this is a contract, the way I see it. I couldn't sign this and honestly say that I can't be biased. So I kept it, because a contract is a contract. And I don't know these people, and I don't know that they're good or bad people, but they are connected in some way to this council. And I don't think that that fits. I really, in my clear conscience, can't see how that fits. Delaware is a great state. Smyrna is a great town. I love it here. I love living in Delaware. I was born and raised in Delaware, and it was the first state that started the greatest nation in the country, in the world, rather, excuse me. And when we moved here, we learned that people call Smyrna the heart of Delaware. And it's been called the heart of Delaware, I guess, for a long time. I didn't know that, but I like that because it's right in the middle, and it's a great place to live. The name Smyrna has been kind of dragged through the mud for the last few years. And the people that live in Smyrna know Smyrna as a great place. But people who are the public, who perceive Smyrna from only the newsprint, not just in Delaware, but in Washington and New York and in various other places across this country, see it in a different light because of what they've been reading. And
I'd like to respond to that, please.
Please do.
Thank you for your comments. They're excellent. The issue of the Board of Elections is going to be addressed later on in this meeting. But just for your information and everybody else's information, that when we discussed these names in executive session at the last meeting, nobody told us that we were dealing with relatives of council people. Mm-hmm. So that was done with all good intentions on some of our part, anyway.
Okay. Right. Well, the people that signed the paper know who they are when they sign the paper. All right. And I think it's up to them then to withdraw. That's all I
Thank
have.
Thank you for your comments. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Kay Wyatt, 563 Kate's Way. I don't come to all these meetings, but I come to a lot of them. Most every meeting I come to, we talk about ethics. Because here a couple weeks ago, we talked about ethics. Got up, Mr. Evans stated we had to go downstairs to do an election board meeting. Matter of fact, he was very upset because he didn't want it out here in the open. Had to go downstairs. Goes right downstairs, and elects his half-sister. Now, that's not ethics. I can't, you have to tell me he knew that was his half-sister. Bill Presley knew that that was his sister. Mayor Schaefer, I think you knew that they were half-sister and sister. You knew that. That is very unethical. I have lived in Smyrna all my life. You lived in Dover your life. Your father was a dentist down there. I am now telling people I live in Dover. Why are you making a mockery of where I come from? This is my town. Dover's your town. If you can't do us justice, go to hell back to Dover and let me have my town back. What is it that you want from us, Mayor Schaefer? What is it that you want from us? Why did you run for mayor? And don't say for the good of the town. Why did you run for mayor? What are you going to do for us? What are you going to give us? Except a bunch of crap in the paper every week. We've been fair to you. We have been fair to you. Now, what are you going to give us back? That's all I'm asking. What are you going to give us back?
Thank you.
This is an ethics board man here. What's he going to give us back?
Thank you very much. Would anybody else like? Yes, ma'am.
Mine isn't on the same subject. I'm Margaret Young, 101A North Carter. I was here 2 weeks ago and did not put my statement in the form of a question, so all I got was a thank you. Now I'm back. I would like to know why those that do not live in town are paying the town electric bill, and what is it, 49% of your budget comes out of the electric bill? I don't live in town, and I am not entitled to town benefits. So why am I being asked to pay part of your budget?
Ms. Young, this isn't a question and answer period, but I would like to ask Mr. Hugg, could you send her a brief explanation? I think it'd be a lot easier to do in writing than to try to do it.
Well, let's
here
put it
tonight
in the paper so everybody can know why we're being asked to pay for something we're not entitled to.
Do we have? I would assume Mr. Hugg has your address.
I'm sure.
Yes, I do.
Ma'am, if I could make sure I understand, you're saying that you live out of town, you receive electric from the town?
From the town, yes, sir.
Just so you're aware of it, that's probably true of every of the nine municipalities in the state that provide electricity. The city of Dover, I think, serves
more
people.
But do they all have 49% of their budget coming out of their electric bill?
I don't know the numbers, ma'am. I'm just telling you that most towns that provide electric do provide it to customers outside their town limits.
Right. Oh, I understand that. And, I mean, I'm willing to pay my fair share. But, gee, I do not get the services from in town. So if I call and ask for a policeman, they say call the state. Now, I'm right on Carter Road. So how hard would it be for one of those officers to slide by should they be needed?
I can respond to that.
Yes,
if there's
sir
a crime in progress, our officers would.
Oh, I do understand. I will I'll verify that. If it's an emergency, yes. But if it's a non-emergency, you're told to call the state, and it seems a little, you know, out of the way that if there's an officer, you see them going back and forth on Carter Road.
Just for information, I suggested that to the Delaware State Police a number of months ago. Colonel Chaffins was the superintendent at that time. I never got any response back. We do have concern with those who live, for all intents and purposes, within our corporate limits, but as far as legality goes, they are outside.
Right.
My response to you at this point is the Delaware State Police choose to respond to be the primary response to your location.
Right. Well, I mean, there's, you know, it's anything that's within the town limits. You know, it's I just don't feel that we should be paying for the town services that we're not getting, and I thank you for your time.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
Jimmy, you want to talk?
My name is John Murphy. I live 5768 North DuPont Parkway, and I'm in the same boat as she is. I live outside of town limits, and I get electric. And I'd just like to know if I could get a letter also from Mr. Hugg, please, just to find out.
Yes.
Maybe even come down and pick up the trash or something. You know, that'd be nice.
Is there anyone else who would like to make comment? Yes, sir.
My name is Charles Hall. I live at 900 Appleberry Drive in Bonaire. And my question is, I heard the councilman talk about the long-range planning on the library, and I'd really like to know what the status of the police station is. Is that in our long-range planning also?
Yes, it is.
All right. Which is what is taking preference, a police station or a library?
Police station.
Actually, there's discussion over public works building being in the priority over a police station. And we discussed that in the long-range planning committee because of the condition. And if Mr. Hall, I'd be happy to take you through the public works
building. I've been through the police station, and that was enough.
Well, if you would like to go to the public works building, you'd see even more. And all I'm saying is that the long-range planning committee, not just me, has felt that the priority is the public works building. The library, as I said to you, is part of our long-range plan. The public works building as well as the police station has been part of the long-range plan of this community for a while. We're adjusting the long-range plan to include a public library, a regional library, which, as I said to you, we're looking at ways that it's not going to cost the community anything if we can pull this all together.
Well, I don't know. I can only speak for myself, but my preference is a police station. I certainly, when there's a criminal or a crime being, I don't want to throw a book at anybody.
I understand, but, I mean, that's a very nice comment, but part of the intellectual property of our community, part of a community is the ability to, intellectual property, to have a library. And most of the people in this room would agree that a library also is an important part of our community as a quality of life issue. I don't know if you grew up in a community without a library. I did, and it was part of my quality of life. And I'm sure it was part of the quality of life of most people in this room. We need a new library, Mr. Hall.
And we need a new police station.
And we need a new police station, but we also need a new public works building.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to make comment? Yes, Mr. Mood.
Jim Mood. I live at 606 Smyrna Clayton Boulevard in Smyrna. Lived here all my life. I'm proud to live in Smyrna. Sat 15 years on this council. Enjoyed all the 15 years of it. I got a couple things on my mind. One is your assessment. I saw it on television that I was watching before I came up here. I think you're ripped off. I don't object to an increase. I think you need an increase to bring the assessments up to where they should be. But these people did it. Where they came from, I don't know where you got them. They sent me the first letter. Description of my house. Number of full baths, just I'll be very brief. One, I have two. Number of half baths. One, I have no half baths. My house was built in 1945. The house was built in 35. The outbuildings, they had them built in 1995. Two of them were built in 1935. They're 60-some years off. I don't know where they're getting this information. The acreage is wrong, the size of the lot, and I have some outbuildings, and they're off on those. And I guess to start it off wrong, the morning he said, I'll be there at 9. He didn't, let's see, that's the first letter. Then I got a letter that said if they want to do inside, to give them a call, which I did. I'll be here at 9:30. That's fine. I doubt measured the outbuildings, and this gentleman came up to the house. My wife was there, and he said, well, I see the boss is out back. And my wife said, let me sell you now. That's not the boss. That is my husband. He said, I guess I've started things off wrong. So he came in, and I said, make yourself comfortable. By gosh, he did. My door is right there, and he came to here and sit himself down on that sofa, and he was comfortable because he never got up, never looked inside the house one bit. Went down the basement to see that I had just had a new furnace put in. He didn't do anything. He's very nice about it, but he didn't do anything. And why would he come out? I mean, I could have told him anything, and he had no idea. And we got talking about the acreage of the land. I said, you're wrong on the acreage. You don't know what an acre. Yes, I do. He kept telling me how much square footage was an acre. So I let that go, and I went upstairs and looked on the computer. He's about 4,000-some feet off on an acre. That poor man didn't even know what an acre of ground is. And he's out assessing property. I think you ought to take another look at it, really. And I say, I'm not here to say the rates were too high with the assessment, but I think they did a poor job. I really do. And while I'm up here, I'll be very brief, a couple other quick things. If somebody's going to move to Smyrna and they come in, they see the appearance of the town. They see last year that the weeds downtown around were up in the streets and all. And they see the road signs and all. And one thing that always got me when I sit on council, and the streetlights in town. And Dick wasn't here then. McGinney was here as chief. And I said, as a police ride by in the midnight shift, if there's three traffic lights out on Commerce Street, write it down, Main and Commerce. Huh? And he used to tell me, we're too busy on midnight. I do it now. Still today, I write the traffic lights down. I come in and I called Sam Fletcher and now Billy Evans. And I said, this is the old man complaining, but here's the list of four. It only makes for a good appearance in town. That makes the town look good. And, Dick, I think you could really implement that. I don't think that's too much of an ask on a midnight shift.
I'm trying to do that routinely. Mr. Moon, I apologize. I've forgotten to remind my officers recently.
Yeah, but I think it would be a good. And while I'm on you, in my 3 minutes, I'll be out of here. one other thing, I see it on TV and I see it in the papers, where people complain about the 45-mile-an-hour speed limit. I think it's become a speed trap. And I don't know anything, how many men you got out there, but in daytime, when you have one police car southbound and one northbound, hawking these people at 45, and you gave the reason, I think you, that the reason was down because all the accidents were down there. And you want to enforce that. I understand that. But that problem's been solved now because the highway department has now changed that light. And we, Smyrna Fire Company, I'm saying we don't get down and respond to all these accidents there anymore because now you have to have a green arrow to turn to Gunnett Road, which is the biggest problem. I think you really ought to take a quick look at that. And maybe I don't want to see Smyrna be a speed trap. And I still got 45 seconds. the last thing is, bothers me to see these coats in front of the American flag. There must be another small thing, but I think, you know, you could find, let's bring the American flag out and find a place for these coats. And that's all I got to say. Thank you very much.
Yes, ma'am.
My name is Helen Miller, and I live at 45 West South Street. The first thing I have to say is I think you've created a fire trap in this room. There is no longer an aisle in the middle. My husband has been declared legally blind by two eye surgeons. Now, if he has to get out of this room in a hurry, how is he going to get out? That should still be in the middle, that aisle. I also think that Smyrna has been ruined by developers. And if nobody believes me, they should have been with me when I worked the referendum at the middle school for over 700 voters. That was the main complaint, developers. There is no infrastructure left in this town. It'll never be the same again. And we have nobody to blame but the mayor.
Is there anyone else who would like to make comment?
I'm Pat Stonewall, 518 Cindy Lane. We all have our wants and we all have our needs, and I'm very sad to see what has happened to this town. I served on council with Jimmy Mood, and Jimmy and I both can tell you that it wasn't easy back then either. There were problems. I've had people say to me, oh, you had it easy then. There wasn't all the problems that there was now, that there is now. But there was. It was a different type of problem. But we worked together. We worked through it. We butt heads with each other. We agreed to disagree. And that's what we need to do in this town again. I look at the – I've seen some of the past budgets. I haven't been able to see the recent ones. But right now – we're not really, from what I see, in a position to do much of anything except try to clean our house up and get back on fair ground again. We need a police station. When I first came on council, the police were in the basement of the Opera House. And you think that wasn't something? They would put people in the cells. People would go around the back and hand them things through the window because the windows were broken out. I remember when one policeman was on the Four Corners and was attacked, and they didn't have the little things that they have on their collars. He was almost beaten half to death because he couldn't get to his radio to call for help. The police cars were breaking down. We've come a long way. And drugs at that time were very bad. When I served on council, we had a lady that was taken alive by people that were high on drugs, and they took her up in one of the buildings in town and cut her open while she was alive. Yes, she did die. But that did happen in this town. There was a racial problem at that time. We've worked through a lot, and we've come a long way. And it saddens me to see these things happen to our town unnecessarily. We need to pull together again, and we can. The library, it was not, it was, in the, well, there was a committee, I guess, that in the library at that time. And the town took it over while Jimmy and I were on council. And it costs money, but a lot of these things are important. But we have to put, we have to get our priorities in order. It's important to have a new police station. It's important to have a new library. And we do need a new public works building. But we have to get ourselves back on fair ground financially before we can do any of these other things. And I just hope that somehow the people of the town can focus on the things that really need to be focused on, stop fighting with each other, and we need to move forward.
Thank you. Anyone else? Seeing no one come forward, I'll close the public portion of the meeting. Thank you very much. 8A, the third reading of Ordinance 006-06, Buildings and Building Regulations. Mr. Hugg, did you want to give us the brief explanation?
as the synopsis indicates, this is some housekeeping changes to Chapter 18, as well as some increases in fees for plumbing permits and other permits. To bring them into line with inflation and other costs.
I'll make a motion. This be the third reading of Ordinance Number 006-06.
I'll second it.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Thank you. 8B, the Comprehensive Plan Text Amendment. Mr. Hugg, did you want to give us a brief explanation of that?
Yeah, there really are two parts to item 8B. One is a change in the text, and one is a change in the map. As you are probably aware, we continue to work with state planning to cross all the T's, dot all the I's to get our plan certified. These were two little issues that came up in the last plan review. Both of them have been sent to planning and zoning and approved by planning and zoning. One is a minor text amendment clarifying how we treat density in small, odd-shaped enclaves where a traditional zoning class might not fit. And the other is correcting a map to show the proper zoning designation for the Sylvan Valley property down off of whatever that is, Brentford Road.
Okay.
I'll make a motion that we approve the Comprehensive Plan Text Amendment and Amendment to Comprehensive Plan Land Use Map.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. C, disbursement of grant monies for 132 West South Street.
This is a request to disperse the money for a project under the Historic District Review Board grant program. This is a property at 132 West South Street. It's revised to have the correct amount for the amount of work that was actually being done. You had approved this grant some time ago at $31.25. The actual reimbursement amount is $29.40.60.
Pleasure, Council.
Make a motion that we disperse the grant monies for 132 West South Street.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you. New business 9A, refer to planning and zoning ordinance to amend subdivision and land development ordinance. Mr. Hugg?
This is an ordinance that I think Mr. J-Work's office had been working on with Mr. Fox back sometime in the fall or so of last year. For whatever reasons, we needed to go back and review it. It is now ready to go to planning and zoning and has been recommended from our attorney for that.
What this will essentially do is it will amend the subdivision ordinance to require a homeowners association maintenance association to perform part of the subdivision approval process so that it's clear that there's an entity that's responsible to maintain those improvements, and there's also a way to for them to collect money to do it amongst themselves so it won't fall to the town.
These are changes, correct? We already have that. Don't we already have that ordinance?
These are like refining it and putting more detail in.
Can I ask a question? I mean, does every subdivision have a homeowners association?
New ones have to.
New ones.
Every new subdivision.
Good.
Now, what constitutes a subdivision's homeowner association? I mean, how do you form that? I mean, is it designated by the town? Is it designated by the developer? Is it?
Usually, the way these things work, number one, that's what this does. It puts the burden on the developer to form a corporation that is the association. And then there's a deed restriction that says when you buy a lot, you become a member of that association. And there's also a mechanism whereby the association assesses the cost of these maintenance, stormwater management ponds, whatever, to the lot owners. And then if they don't do it, then the way we're trying to get this accomplished is the town would have the authority to step in and enforce it. Okay.
I find it kind of interesting in that so every house and every townhouse sold in the town of Smyrna is going to be part of a homeowner association which applies its own dues and its own
I want to make a thing. Most residential subdivisions actually do have homeowners associations where they, you know, deal with all kinds of rules, you know, about whether you can have laundry in the front yard or whatever. The town really doesn't care too much about that. The town's main interest here is maintenance, open areas, common elements. So, like one of the one I mentioned earlier this evening for Smyrna Commercial Center, that's five commercial properties that have an agreement amongst themselves that they have to pay the cost of maintaining a stormwater management pond. It's called a maintenance agreement. It's not even called a homeowners association.
Okay.
I'll make a motion that we refer to the Planning and Zoning Commission an ordinance to amend subdivision and land development ordinance in reference to homeowners associations.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you. 2006 assessments. Mr. Hug?
Mr. Schaefer, you have the 2006 property tax assessment. By charter, we are required at the first meeting in March to adopt a new assessment and to adopt a list of additions to the future tax bills, which is a document that was also on each of the council members' desk tonight. The assessments have been reviewed by the Board of Assessment and approved by them. This is the first step in a process for computing the 2006 property tax billings, which will go out in early May. There is also the second thing on your or next thing on your agenda is to set the time and date for the appeals hearings for individuals to come in and question their assessment.
Why don't we see if we can accept the assessments? What's the pleasure of the council?
I just have a question. Mr. Mood was complaining about the assessment. Is this the new assessment?
Yes.
This is the new assessment. we appointed a board of assessment a couple of meetings ago with the council. They have reviewed the assessment. They've gone over the list of values, the area designations, and the standards that were used and are satisfied that that the assessment is accurate and is ready to be adopted.
What's the name of the commercial entity that helped the Board of Assessment?
The assessor is the same assessor we've used for years. It's it was Cole or Tremble. It's now CLT, Division of Tyler Industries. They have routinely done our assessment every year. They also did this. This is really a revaluation of the entire town.
Thank you.
If I may, I'd like to make a comment for the benefit of our audience about this issue. I received my tax assessment, my reassessment, and the value of my house is up now about 30%. And the first thing I thought was, oh, my gosh, my taxes are going to go up 30%. That's not true. This is a revenue-neutral thing, which means that even though the values have increased, the town can still only take the same amount of money that we took last year. So what we'll have to do is add up these new numbers, divide it down, and adjust it. So in effect, we cannot collect any more taxes because all of our values have gone up than we did last year. Raising the actual taxes is a separate issue and one that we'll probably be facing at some point. But again, the phrase here is revenue neutral. You're theoretically not going to pay any more taxes this year than you did last year. But there will be exceptions. There are certain divisions in town that have been paying so much less than they should have that they're going to see a much more substantial increase. I saw about a 30% increase. I'm guessing that one of the areas over by me, the West Shores, they may see as much as a 60% increase because, unfortunately, they were undervalued all this time, which is what necessitated our having to reassess the town. So, again, this is revenue neutral. We should basically see the same tax bill we saw last year. We're not raising the taxes with this method. Okay? Thank you.
Is there a motion to accept the assessments?
So move.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you. I'd like a motion to set the date and time for the appeal day for Monday, April 3rd, 2006, from 4 to 7 p.m.
A reminder that we need for the appeal, the charter requires 3 members of council and 1 member of the assessment board, so I will be polling you as council members to participate in that appeal.
It's a pleasure, council.
I'll make a motion. We set the time of day for appeal day to be Monday, April 3rd, 2006, from 4 o'clock to 7 o'clock p.m.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. We have a request to annex North Carter Road, lots 26, 26.01, and lot 34. Mr. Hugg, did you want to make any comment?
These are 3 lots in Spruance City along Carter Road. They are part of the original Spruance City subdivision as re-subdivided, I think, back in the mid-1990s. They are within the growth area of the town, and requested zoning is R2A. If you are favorable towards us tonight, this will begin the rezoning process or the annexation and rezoning process for this.
Would this require a vote?
Yes, this will require a vote of the property owners. This is and a subsequent vote of the council.
I don't mean council, but I mean the surrounding property owners or
no,
just
under the charter only.
Just the people who requested it.
The people who requested it or anyone who resides on the property is authorized to vote.
This is empty lots, right?
This is empty lots, right.
And if I may, this is immediately adjacent to Smyrna territory.
It is.
And it is included in our comprehensive plan?
It is at this zoning.
And it comes with the recommendation of?
Staff.
Staff? Very good. Thank you.
What's the pleasure, council? I'll make a motion. We annex North Carter Road lots, let's see, 26, 26.01, and 334. Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Result of the bid openings. Mr. Hugg, did you want to go through these?
Yeah, you can do these either together or separately if you want. There are 2 bids. The first one is a distribution line construction. This is the aerial portion of the 4 distribution circuits connecting the new substation to the town's basic electric grid and replacing the feed that now comes down Route 300 from the connective facility to the old substation. There were 4 utility bidders. Prices ranged from $365,000 to $684,000. The apparent low bidder was Area Utilities with a bid of $365,000. The bids were reviewed by and approved by Downs Associates and recommended for approval by council.
If I may, I'll make a motion that we approve the 25 kilovolt distribution line construction and 138 kilovolt transmission line construction, and that the bid be awarded to Area Utilities for an amount of $365,000.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Is there a motion? Did you want to make any further comment? Mr. Huggers?
No, the second, that's item.
You already went over that.
That's E1. Do you want to touch on E2? On 9E2 is a.
Yes.
Okay, 9E2 is also part of the utility construction related to the new substation. This is the concrete duct bank and vaults that carry the lines under Artisan Drive as part of the extension of the work to connect to the new utility circuits. In this case, there were only two bidders. Three utility companies came to the pre-bid. Only two of them bid. The low bidder, again, was Area Utilities with a bid of $65,000. We did meet with Area to make sure that they were not biting off more than they could complete. They indicated that they were ready to begin this work, and, in fact, this was appropriate timing for them. Downs Associates has recommended that we award this bid to Area Utilities in the amount of $65,000.
Make a motion that we accept the bid on E2 from Area Utilities, $65,000.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Next is request from Delaware State University to install two wells out at their research facility. Mr. Jaywork has given us his opinion that it is permissible under the code. What's the pleasure of council?
I'll make a motion we grant the permission to install two wells.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. You have in your packet a resolution to create a bargaining unit for PERB negotiations.
I need to speak to that. Our first meeting for negotiations would be Friday, and I only have a few days left on council. I don't have the full 60 days. The negotiations take a full 60 days, so I would like someone else from council to take my place on it.
Rick, do you want to do that?
I've got the same amount of time Bill's got.
That's true. Does Mr. Cahill want to do that?
I've never been involved in a... in an event like this before, Mr. Hill, maybe you could just fill me in on what would be required from me.
Well, it's negotiations with the electric crew has accepted the union, AFSCME. And we set the ground rules for our meetings the other day with an attorney from Mr. Terry's office. And I don't think you would have any problems. You just go by the ground rules and... if you see something that's a problem, that they're not negotiating in good faith, then you raise an objection to it.
You have counsel to help
you. You have counsel at every meeting, so.
Okay. And can you tell me what kind of time involvement this would be? Are there any set meetings, or would that be a flexible?
First one's Friday, and then there could be one a week or two after that.
Yeah, worst case situation, well, let me back up. Under the PERB rules, the negotiation has to be completed in 60 days from the first negotiating meeting, which is Friday. So basically, we have a two-month window. Under worst-case situations, we would envision, you know, meeting perhaps once every other week or something on that order. When we met with the AFSCME representatives the other day, I think the general sense was that we should be able to conclude these negotiations in about four meetings.
That's true.
You know, the areas for discussion are relatively limited. Our personnel code sets forth an awful lot of the what would normally be contract requirements. So, you know, I'm envisioning that we probably are looking at, you know, four or five meetings over the next 2 month period.
Okay, would there be a certain amount of flexibility as to what day or what time we might be able to do
that? Yeah, they would
no
be
locked
set.
In dates, correct?
Right, there are no locked in dates, except that the first meeting, first negotiating meeting is 10 o'clock this coming Friday downstairs.
Then the 60 days starts from this Friday.
Very good. Okay, well, I'll be happy to accept
that. So we'll remove Hill and add Cahill. So we'll have Presley, Cahill, Hog and Store, correct?
And Thomas Barrows as the judge.
What's the pleasure of counsel?
I don't think I make that motion because it's about me. Make the motion.
I move that we accept the negotiating committee as stated.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
H, appointment of the personnel committee. We had two resignations on the personnel committee. I have a we have a letter in here somewhere.
Yeah, we have
I had it on top here.
Yeah, we have an email from Mr. Presley today advising me that two members of the personnel committee had submitted their resignations. That's Mrs. McKnight and
Mr. Rich.
And Mr. Presley had recommended that Skip Rebar be asked to fill the vacancy on the personnel committee.
I'd like to appoint Skip Rebar to the personnel committee.
Well, if I may.
I'm assuming Mr. Rebar is willing to be appointed. Okay.
But just before we take that step, we still have listed on the roster that Mr. Eby, I believe it's Ron Eby.
Yeah, he resigned over.
He actually is also.
He has officially resigned. Thank you very much.
He shouldn't be on here. What's the pleasure of counsel?
I'll make a motion that we appoint Skip Rebar to the personnel committee.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you.
Now, wait a minute.
Yes,
how
sir.
Many is that make on there?
Five.
That's a total of five?
Three yeah. Council, two citizen members.
This is an item I asked to be added to the agenda. At a recent personnel committee meeting, the personnel committee went into executive session, and several councilmen, including myself, were informed that we were to leave the room and not privy to what occurred in that executive session. Now, the purposes of executive sessions are something delineated under the Freedom of Information Act, and the purpose of them is to keep certain sensitive materials from the public. There are certain things that just, you know, we all don't want to know. Salaries, very personal issues, and they're very clearly defined under FOIA. However, the purpose of that is, again, to keep it out of the public eye. However, we members of this council are not members of the public. We are the executives of this town. And my feeling is, having looked at the charter, the ordinances, and FOIA, that there is absolutely no reason that a councilman, any councilman, can be excluded from an executive session of any committee meeting of this town. Now, when it occurred at the last one, we all just got up and left. There was no point in making a fuss about it. But unless Mr. J. Work or someone else can give me some reason why, how a councilman can be excluded from these executive sessions in a committee meeting, my position is that from this point forward, I intend to sit and monitor, observe that meeting, that executive meeting, whether I'm on that committee or not. We do have the one limitation that there are only three members of council allowed in any one committee. The reason for that is so that we cannot attain a quorum, a majority, because then we're actually conducting town business if we have four people or more. So I understand that, but our right to sit in on any of these committee meetings is open and apparent, and it's always been that way, so I just want to lay that down now so we all understand each other.
Well, we do that on advice of our council, and he actually had some
with all respect, Mr. Cale, and I'll be happy to get a look at this again. I gave the opinion that the committee, if you're not on the committee, when a public body, whether it's this town council, whether it's the public safety committee, whether it's the subcommittee on traffic signs of the public safety committee, whatever level of public body that you're talking about, that is a public body. When that public body declares an executive session, it is basically for them, for that body, to discuss their business. And obviously, if they have to invite particular individual to come in because maybe it's a personnel committee member and they need to have the employee come in, then that person can come in. Obviously, if they need an attorney, the attorney can be there. But it's always been my opinion that if you are not a member of that public body, that you cannot be there. I say you, I'm speaking about anybody.
Sure.
And part of the reason for that is that once you start making exceptions and say that this person can come in or that person can come in, then you kind of open it up, and where can you draw the line? And, in fact, this very problem came up, I guess, about a year and a half ago because, I guess, I'm not sure, historically, the chief has always attended most committee meetings. And we actually went to the trouble to appoint the chief as an ex officio member of these committees so that he could be in the executive sessions. Now, I have no heartburn about members of the council attending executive sessions. If you're going to do that, I think either I need to go back and do some research and see if there's any basis that says that the appointing authority has a right to be in the executive session with the body that they appointed, or the easier way to resolve that would simply to be to pass a resolution to make all members of the council ex officio members of the committees. I won't have a hard problem with, won't have any problem with that. But the way it sits right now, I'm the reason that you're excluded, because I don't know who, I can't remember who it was. I was asked that question and I gave the opinion.
Yeah, and I chose not to argue it at the time, but I've since done a little research. One significant difference I'd like to point out in that scenario is that the chief, with all due respect, is a employee of the town, a manager of the town, whereas we are elected officials. We are the executive branch of this town. So for business to be conducted in an executive session, even though a councilman may not have voting privileges, which is makes sense under the charter, I don't think that any business in this town should be, unable to be monitored by any elected official and member of the executive branch. So what I would do, Mr. Jaywork, in that case is I'd ask you to further research. But frankly, I want to see it in writing. I want to see where we are excluded from this in writing. And if there's nothing in the charter or in the ordinances or under FOIA that specifically excludes members of the executive branch from attending executive sessions of committee meetings, conducting town business in the town of Smyrna, then I fully intend to remain at these executive sessions and will not leave next time around.
Let me ask a question.
Sure.
I don't know, if to save a buck, really, rather than me spending the time to research.
I'd leave it just the way it is.
Is there a feeling on the council that you all want to be, as I said, you could pass a motion that said all council members are ex officio members of all committees appointed by the council, and that would obviate that, then you could attend all the executive sessions.
There's a lot of legal fees.
If that would clean it up.
Give me some.
Then let's do that, because I agree with Customer Cahill that if you're taking the time to go to the committee meeting, you should be involved in all the business conducted, not just the open business.
And by a matter of course, we're invited to all committee meetings, So I agree. I think we should. Make a motion to make us all ex officio members.
Before you make that motion, let's take something sensitive like personnel, okay? You have a personnel committee, and I guess you have, three members of the council that are on the committee?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But you've got four members who aren't, obviously. And let's assume that there's something very confidential that's going to be discussed about that person, and the personnel committee goes into executive session to discuss that very personal matter with this person. It seems to me that there could be somewhat of a problem with one of the council members sitting there monitoring something that's within the responsibility of the personnel committee. And obviously, it does make things less confidential.
Well, the other thing is that the committees have no legislative power. So any decision-making that they do is only a recommendation, my understanding, to full council. So therefore, actually, I think it would be an advantage to have actually more council members there to understand the proceedings of that executive session.
Well, that is the reason that we do go to that we have committees and we go to committee meetings, is because this is where most of the business of the town is done. This is why by the time we come up here, we throw these laws out, vote on them quickly, and are done with them, because we've already spent many, many hours constructing the surrounding issues about this business. But once again, the members of this council are already charged with attending executive sessions on all kinds of matters in this town that are of a sensitive and sensitive nature, and we are charged with the responsibility to handle that information confidentially. That is part of what we do here. So I don't see any difference between the council having an executive session where we are given sensitive information and being at a committee meeting where sensitive information is discussed.
Mr. Jaywork, are you completely comfortable with that?
Yeah, if the council could appoint all the council members to the committees. What I'm simply suggesting is you're appointing them as non-voting ex officio members of the committees.
Sure.
And then they can sit in.
I'll make a motion that we appoint all council members to the all committees, ex officio members of all committees.
Non-voting.
I second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you, Jay. Mr. Burt.
Thank you, Mr. Jay.
Yes, I brought up the Board of Elections because, as we all know, we went down to executive session at the last meeting, and at the insistence of Councilman Evans, come to find out after we agreed on some names to be on the Board of Elections that one of them is related to him and one's related to Councilman Presley. But nobody offered that information at the meeting. So I think we need to bring it back up and talk about it, the significance of it. And since I put this on the agenda, we did get an email from Mr. Jaywork addressing this, in which I think he does an excellent job pointing out the potential difficulties. Can you share that with us, Terry? Did everybody see that email?
I'm going to give you the long version because this is going to be a controversial issue, possibly.
Let's start right at the beginning. The mayor wrote a memo or an email, whichever, some communication to the town manager with five names on it, I believe, recommending them for the Board of Elections. Then these two names in question were on it. Then, like I said, when we get down to the executive session, the two names were brought up and approved, not knowing that they were related. And therefore, you know, we weren't told about it.
Let me give a brief recital of the facts as I understand. There was a letter that the gentleman referred to earlier is a letter that I actually wrote that went out over the town manager's signature. But it basically was to advise people that if they took this position, they had to be neutral and they had to be unbiased, not only publicly, but also to the extent that they could be privately. That letter was sent, to my information, to 18 individuals. Five names I got copies of emails where people had emailed the town or written to the town and requested to be appointed. Six letters were sent to people from last year's election where Mr. Evans has since passed away. Is that right?
Cummins Evans.
So out of the seven people that were on the board last year, as a courtesy to them, six were sent to those. And then there were seven additional names that were sent out, and I don't know. I didn't see letters from those people. It could be they were recommended by the mayor. They could have been recommended by Mr. Hug. They could have been, they could have sent letters that I didn't see. But at any rate, 18 letters were sent out. Now, of those 18, only eight people returned the letter. Only eight people out of 18 returned letters saying that they could sit on the committee and be on the board and be unbiased. As you know, the council did hold an executive session to discuss the qualifications of the people. The council came back and appointed five individuals and then two alternates. There was one additional. The eighth name was not appointed either to the committee or as an alternate. This is an important issue to the town because under the town charter, not only does the election board basically supervise the election and decide the legality of votes, but actually, if there's a tie vote, the election board decides the winner. That's the way the charter reads. So I've looked at the law, and as I said, you're going to get the long version. The charter does not give any guidance on this particular issue. The town does not have a code of ethics, so the town is subject to the state ethics statute. And 29 Delaware Code, Chapter 58, basically says that it applies to any town that has not adopted its own code of ethics that has been approved by the State Ethics Commission. So if this town were to ever adopt a code of ethics, it would still have to go to the State Ethics Commission. That statute has a number of provisions in it. The legislative findings, and I'm going to quote a few things here. The legislative findings, it says that in the democratic form of government, the conduct of officers must uphold the respect and confidence of the people, with conduct which creates a justifiable impression among the public that such trust is being violated. It says another finding is that officers must have the benefit of specific standards to guide their public conduct. Specific standards. And it says that it's desirable that all citizens be encouraged to assume public office and therefore the activities of officers should not be unduly circumscribed. There's a construction clause in this that basically tells us how to interpret the statute. It says this subchapter shall be construed to promote high standards of ethical conduct in state government. And then there's some definitional sections, and it says that a close relative means a person, et cetera, but it also includes siblings of the whole and the half blood. It defines an honorary state official as a person who serves as an appointed member of any agency and who receives not more than $5,000 in compensation, which obviously would include the members of the election board, who I think are going to get $25. Defines what a matter is basically anything that comes before that board. There is a section in the state code that talks about conflicts of interest, and it says that no honorary state official, and again, now we're talking, when I say that, that means a member of the election board may participate in the review or disposition of any matter in which that official has a personal or private interest. And then it tells us what a personal or private interest is. It says a personal or private interest in a matter is an interest which tends to impair a person's independence of judgment in the performance of the person's duties with respect to that matter. It goes on to say that a person has an interest which tends to impair his independent judgment when any action would result in a financial benefit to accrue to the person or a close relative. Now, I want to pause right there because when you read through the statute, no one here is going to get any benefit. Councilman Presley and Councilman Evans are already on the council. The people here that are related to them, Evans and Presley, will not benefit no matter how their siblings might vote on the election board. They're not going to receive any financial benefit. So I conclude that there is no conflict of interest under the state statute. Under the state statute, there's also a section that talks about code of conduct. Each honorary state official shall endeavor to pursue a course of conduct which will not raise suspicion among the public that such honorary official is engaging in acts which are in violation of the public trust and which will not reflect unfavorably upon the government. Now, I think that the answer to that question about whether someone's engaging in something that's a violation of the public trust is somewhat in the eye of the beholder. I want to point out that, as I just did a minute ago, that the individuals here are not related to any candidate who's running for election. They're related to somebody on the council, but they're not related to a candidate. There's nothing in existing state law that prohibits a person from serving on the election board. There's nothing in the charter that says that, at least where they're related to someone on the council who's not a candidate for the office. And one authority, we were trying to find out what the law was across the country, and one legal treatise we refer to is called Corpus Juris Segundum. And it's 67 CJS Section 32. It says relationship by affinity or consanguinity, which means being related, to the appointing power or to the members of the appointing power, ordinarily does not constitute a disqualification from public office. In other words, there has to be a statute that says you can't do it. That merely the fact that you're even related to somebody who's appointing you does not disqualify you. We located a case called Harvey versus Odessa Board of Adjustment. And that case seemed to be the closest case in Delaware law that we could find pertaining to this. And I'll give you the brief facts of that. In that case, the town council, the town itself, sought a zoning permit, I think, for a veterans memorial in the historic district. So they went to the town building inspector, and he issued them a permit. And then they had to go to the historic review committee, and they reviewed it, and they gave the town the approval. But a citizen who lived, I guess, in the historic district was concerned about it, and said she appealed to the Board of Adjustment. Well, it turns out that of the members of the Board of Adjustment, one was the wife of the mayor, one was the husband of a council member, and one was the husband of the historic review committee. So you can see it was kind of a stacked deck because those are the very people who had applied for the permit in the first place. They indicated that none of them had any financial interest in the outcome of this, and they all stated that they could render an impartial decision. And the court, in that case, dismissed that part of the case against them. It said that they were not violating the law, that they were perfectly entitled to go ahead and hear this appeal. The court said, although it would have been prudent for these three people to recuse themselves, they were not required to do so because they had no financial interest in the outcome. And the court also pointed out that the plaintiff or the appellant in this case had failed to show that any of the three individuals had a direct, substantial, or pecuniary interest in the outcome. And a third factor, which I think distinguishes itself here from the town of Smyrna, the court noted that in the small town of Odessa, which had a population of only 311 people, it might have been difficult to find replacements who didn't have some other conflict of interest. So I guess what I'm saying at this point is that there's no existing state law or charter provision that bars this. I emphasize again, these people are not related to any candidate for office. There's no financial benefit to them or the close relative. There's been no showing that I'm aware of a direct, substantial, or pecuniary interest. I want to point out that these people did sign a letter indicating, it wasn't under oath, it wasn't notarized, but they've signed a letter stating that they will remain neutral publicly and that they will approach anything that comes before them in an unbiased manner. Delaware law is a case, BB Medical Center versus Certificate of Need Appeals Board, that says that public officials are entitled to a strong presumption of honesty and integrity. There's also a court case that said that an unarticulated concern of an appearance of impropriety is insufficient to create a conflict of interest. There must be some evidence of impropriety, not mere speculation. Now, in this case, I know that there's a lot of people out there that say, you know, this really looks bad and this is terrible, but you have to assume, to disqualify these people, you have to assume that either Mr. Evans or Mr. Presley is going to do anything to benefit the mayor. You have to assume that they are going to... Excuse me. You have to assume that they are going to go to their sibling and try to exercise influence over that sibling. And then you have to assume that the sibling, who's already signed a letter saying that they wouldn't do anything like that, would then make a decision on anything other than the facts and the law. I think at this point, you know, that's all speculation. Now, having said all that, well, let me just be very clear for the press and the public. It's my legal opinion that these people have every legal right to serve on the Board of Elections, that they're not violating state law, the charter, or the state code of conduct. Now, that's my legal opinion. Now, having said that, I also need to go back and the earlier things I read from this state code about maintaining the public trust and high standards and all that. That's in the state code. The Harvey v. Odessa case, which I talked about, the court said it would have been prudent for them to recuse themselves. In this case, we're not Odessa with 311 people. We have, 2,500 people in this town? There are already two alternates who have already been appointed who could step in. We're not limited to these people. I'd also note that you've all been reading in the paper probably about this proposed municipal election statute, pardon me, which is the town attorney and also the attorney for the Delaware League. I'm still not crazy about it because it's like 25 or 40 pages long. It's a long document, but that aside, if that was law, there is a provision in there that talks about the Board of Elections, and it says that a member of the Board of Elections should not be an elected official or a relative of an elected official within two degrees of consanguinity. So if that law that they're considering was the law right now, these people could not serve. But that's not the law yet. It's not been adopted. So there's no legal prohibition. I've already indicated that my opinion is legal. There's no conflict of interest. Justifiable basis for appearance of impropriety, I think that's mostly speculation. I am uncomfortable with the fact, if you want to talk about a possible appearance of impropriety, it's simply the fact that this information was not disclosed earlier. That is the only thing. If the information were put out on the table right at the beginning, this is my sister, this is my brother, whatever, then the council could have made a full, informed decision, and in my opinion, they could have appointed him. And nothing wrong with that, as I already said. That's the one thing that I think possibly gives some appearance of impropriety.
Well, that, excuse me one second. That one thing right there makes this whole thing suspect by itself.
Okay. Well, let me finish because I'm just about done. My recommendation is a practical matter. It doesn't matter what my legal opinion here is because no matter whether these people are operating, you know, not in violation of the law or not, they're going to be treated as if they were. It's going to create more controversy. Probably, if anything comes before them and they have to make a decision, it's probably going to cause grounds for an appeal to the court and have us tied up in litigation again. I think it's just going to keep this whole controversy in the press and it's going to continue to make a bad name for the town. So my recommendation is either that these two individuals, and these are not for legal reasons, these are purely for political or practical reasons, that these individuals either step down or that they be removed by the town council. town council then invite, because we still have time, open this up process up again, invite additional names to be submitted, appoint the two alternates, or you know, let more people submit their names and then choose from the whole field either way. I think opening the field up and asking for more candidates might be the better way to go. That's my first recommendation, and the second alternative would be if the council decides to go forward with these people, which again I think they have every legal right to do, is to ask for an opinion from the State Ethics Commission, because, and I did speak with Janet Wright today, who's the attorney, and she said that their next meeting is March the 21st. They would need a request by the 10th or the 13th, and they could actually give a verbal decision on March the 21st at the close of their hearing. They would submit a written decision later. That would still give us plenty of time before the election board has to be appointed 20 days before the election. So that would be April the 30th. We'd have like a two-week opportunity or two-week window. Pardon me, probably 10, not real great at math, 10 days window after the State Ethics Commission gave an opinion. I think that the State Ethics Commission might very likely come out with the same opinion I did, and I think it would be very difficult for anyone to criticize these people if it's been reviewed by the State Ethics Commission and they gave a letter saying that they approved it.
Can I ask you, are you ready for questions?
Yes.
Can I ask a question first, or did you want to go, Rick? Just a comment. These folks, if someone could call them, they may be willing to step aside. I don't know these people. I've met one of them. We're not going to have any outbursts, folks. You're going to be asked to leave the room. I did meet one lady when we swore them in. When was that, Thursday? Mr. Hugg, I think it was Thursday. That's the first time I've ever met either one of them. So Mr. Hugg could probably give them a courtesy phone call and see what their position is in the morning. That may resolve the issue very quickly.
Was when they were sworn in, I wasn't there. Was Bill's sister there?
She,
I understand she
was. She was out of town, sickness or in the family, or I have no idea whether
she's not actually sworn in yet.
No, she's been appointed but not sworn in.
She was there.
The other comment I want to make is I think if, in fact, these people do agree to step aside, I don't know what their position would be. If two vacancies did occur, I want to be very aware of the fact that we do our best to have minority participation on this board. We have a requirement on the personnel committee, for instance, that there shall be a minority member. We don't have that requirement on the election board. However, it's been a practice of this community for years and years and years, and I think we need to be.
Does that mean you have to solicit?
You're going to have to be asked to leave if you speak out of turn again. You need to quiet down. I think we need to be very careful about that, and we need to consider that very seriously.
If I could, that's one of the reasons I suggested reopening the field.
Yeah.
What if no minority person comes forward? We have an issue. And the other, I agree with, I think you wrote a very good piece of work here covering the legal ground but also the practical ground. And I think that you would not have had to write this if it weren't for the last year's election, when people in the election board were doing things that they shouldn't have. And you wrote a very good contract.
What did they do that they weren't supposed to do?
They were...
Mr. Schaefer, I believe the list goes on and on.
Mr. Schaefer...
Far too much to cover in one meeting.
I've heard Mr. Jaworks say numerous times that
I think
these folks were honorable people.
You know, these folks here... We don't know these folks, and I think they're probably very honorable people. I mean, we don't know them. But the fact of the matter is that we have to be very careful based on the fact that last year's election created a huge controversy in this town. And actually, you know, to this day, we haven't resolved the issues, and this town is split because of that. What I consider a very flawed election. And the fact that the election board was conducting themselves in the way they were created a situation that, Mr. Jaworks, you've been here 30 years, you've never seen it. and you told them not to do things, and they did it anyway. So now we have to be extremely careful as to who we bring to the election board, that they are squeaky clean, that they understand their role, and they cannot behave in the way that the election board behaved last year. And I think we all agree to that. And the fact that we didn't know that these two people were relatives of current council members, who are relatives of people who have certain beliefs on this council, and we know where their beliefs lie, that also that can influence where the election board decides, because we know the people that sit on this council have certain beliefs, and unfortunately they're not here right now, but they have certain belief systems, and that we know that through their voting and through their discussion and discourse on this council, we understand their philosophy, and that is their right and their privilege, and it's very legal. But do we want to elect these people to our election board who may be under the influence? We don't know. It's perfectly legal. But on the other hand, there is a sense of impropriety in our community.
Tying in with what Dr. Shervinak said, I'd like to say this.
Yes, sure, certainly.
Sorry, I just wanted to
go right ahead.
The one thing I just want to pick up, I think a point I didn't mention is for the people themselves. Right now, I still stand by the election board last year. I think that they did the best they could under very difficult circumstances. But that aside, I don't want to see these people go through what some of the people went through last year. Right now, if these people are the most honest people, unbiased, do everything perfect, they are still going to be excoriated by the public and the press, and they're going to be under intense public scrutiny.
I don't agree with that because from the point of view that if the decisions that were made, and I sat there and watched every decision made, if those decisions had been, there were only about 35 or 40 decisions that I think were flawed, and they didn't agree with you. There were 12 or 14 times you said no. The chairman of the committee said no. And what you were unaware of that first night, Mr. Jaywerk, was that one of those people were campaigning with Mr. Schaefer, sitting in their houses, signing their affidavits. One of our election boards member was doing that, and she said, I didn't know I was doing anything wrong. And I agree with her. She probably didn't. But she was told by this gentleman that was okay.
Let's stick to the facts.
Those are the facts.
Those aren't the facts.
But anyway, be that as it may.
Let's talk about tonight's problem.
Tonight's problem is caused by yesterday's problem.
If I may, this does, as Dr. Shervinak alluded to, this whole issue is a direct result of our election last year. Let there be no mistake about that. From what I hear of the history of Smyrna going back 39 or 40 years, there has never been an election like last year in this town. Now, because of this, we not only got involved in a embarrassing public scandal, if you will, but not only has the town of Smyrna been embroiled in this, but the entire state legislature of the state of Delaware has been embroiled in this. The election board, with several representatives and senators, have been involved in composing all new election laws for the entire state, and it's known as the Smyrna Bill because of what happened here last year. Now, this council, in this year's running, has taken very affirmative steps to try to prevent any possible repercussion of this. We don't want any more embarrassment for our town. We don't want any more problems with the election. We want a simple and a clean election. In that vein, we sent a letter to these applicants for the election board where we said very clearly that we here's one sentence. In short, any member of the election board should conduct himself or herself publicly in such a manner so that no member of the general public would have reason to believe that such person had any bias towards or against any particular candidate. Now, the new laws that the state is coming up with, as Mr. Jaywerk alluded to, also, even though it hasn't passed yet and it will not pass in time for our election, which is why we've had to kind of construct this thing on our own, say that expressly prohibit relatives of elected officials from serving on the election board, regardless if they were running for office in that election. Okay, so obviously the people who are constructing this up at the legislature see that this is a problem. One thing we ran into last year, and this is for the benefit, for the good of our town, is that Mr. Jaywerk says those serving on the election board will form the basis for another legal challenge to the election if there is a question. Well, last year's legal challenge cost the taxpayers of Smyrna $40,000. Okay, that's a whole lot of money when normally you don't have to spend a dime in an election for these legal costs. And the other thing is that I think Mr. J. Works, where he says that basically his advice was that we need to ask the people to step down or to be removed from the council. I hope I'm not misquoting you here. And also, in any event, and that in any event, I think the council should that the two alternates should take their place. And that's what I believe exactly is what should happen here. Yeah, well, I believe the alternate should. We already chose the rest of the board. If we remove two members for any reason, you move the two alternates in, and we open the field to get two more alternates. I think that's a procedure that should be taken here. But none of this would be happening if it was not for the events of last year. I don't think the town of Smyrna, either emotionally or financially, can afford another election like we had last year. And I think we have to take extra steps to be above board and clean. And the really sad thing about this all, and this is what Mr. J. Work said also, had the members of this council who did have these relatives up for these positions advised us other members of council of this 2 weeks ago, we may have sat back and said, well, okay, does anybody think this is a problem? Let's talk about it. Let's knock it around. And let's say we did go ahead and appoint those two people. Well, there would be no news story. There would be no WBOC or the News Journal or the Delaware State Times putting this on the front page and once again causing embarrassment to the town of Smyrna. But the fact that none of us were advised by this, we were all blindsided by it. And that is, I think, almost going to force us into having to ask these people to step down. Thank you very much.
A couple things. I think I agree we should ask them to step down. We should not send this to the State Ethics Commission or any other state agency. We need to take care of it right here at home.
I agree.
And, unfortunately, we have two victims who are only victims because of what happened last year again, and they're probably very decent, honest people. But we're being forced to be squeaky clean, and we have to appear squeaky clean, so we have to ask them to step down.
I'd like to ask another question. Mrs. Miller, could I ask you to come forward, please? You were sworn in last week as a member of the Board of Elections.
Yes, I was.
Do you believe that you can treat me fairly and impartially?
You're not a candidate. It doesn't say anything about anything I say about you. It says about a candidate.
Well, could you answer the question? Could you treat me fairly or impartially?
I certainly could. Could you treat me fairly? Are you treating me fairly?
Absolutely.
No, you're not. You brought me up here in front of all these people. Why?
Because you attacked me about an hour ago.
You didn't deserve it?
Ms. Miller, may I ask you a question then?
Yes.
You obviously have no relatives on town council or
among the in the state of Delaware except my husband and my daughter and grandchildren.
Do you feel that you can go through this election by the requirements we've made out in the
can.
Law to you and that you can abstain from involvement in any political campaign?
Yes, I can.
And
I have worked state elections for over 10 years. I know what I'm doing.
You feel you can remain unbiased and...
Yes, I can.
Thank you very much.
And what was that you were going to say and refrain from making comments publicly or in private?
About a candidate, as it says in the letter.
In the letter, that's correct.
I'm sorry, I don't know what you're talking about.
Excuse me, I want to make a motion. We go into executive session real quick.
To talk about me?
Talk about personnel problems. Is there a second?
Excuse me, wait a minute.
Whoa.
Yeah.
What's the purpose for executive
What's the purpose
session?
For executive
I
session?
I want to discuss Board of Election personnel issues.
Can you be a little more specific about that?
I want to discuss present appointed members of the Board of Election that may be having problems with bias.
I will gladly step down if you think I'm not capable.
Mrs. Miller, I don't think you need to, and I can vouch for you and the entire community. I've known you for many, many years. I know you're an honest and decent person, and you will serve the community very well.
Thank you.
I have no doubts about your credibility in the fact that you've done many elections, and you understand the election process very clearly and succinctly. The fact that she had some negative comments about a sitting candidate or the mayor is she's making comments about government as it currently exists. But she is now an elected official, or an appointed official for an election board, and I feel very confident in her honesty and decency.
I'll second that.
Can I say something? I'm not going to sit well with you, Dr. C, but I think the mayor made a point here. It's the point I said earlier. It's the eye of the beholder. This lady obviously does not like the mayor, and so somebody can make an accusation that she's going to – somebody who supports the mayor is going to say this lady is going to vote, decide anything against a candidate who might be favorable to the mayor, just the same as people are saying that Mr. Presley's sister is going to be biased.
It's also very obvious that the mayor does not like me, and it has been obvious for since he's been elected.
Well, I'd like to address the conundrum that issue brings up.
The conundrum of that issue is
this. Hold on one second. One second. Mr. Jaywerk, if you recall, at the meeting 2 weeks ago, I supported Mrs. Miller, and I think Dr. Shervinak recalls that also. I said she has years of expertise. If she hadn't have done what she did tonight, I would continue to support her.
Aww.
I think one of the issues is, can somebody disagree with me in this audience? Mr. Hall disagreed with me. He's on the election board.
You're talking about the police station.
No, he disagreed with me. And he said, he made actually a sarcastic comment to me about, what am I going to do, throw a book at him? You said that to me and you belittled my comment. You attacked me, Mr. Hall, but that's okay. I can take it. You have a different opinion, that's okay. And I'm not going to ask you to be removed from the election board because you have a different opinion than I do. Or you think my priorities are screwed up. And I trust in your honesty and integrity on the election board. So I think that we have a different issue here.
I'm not questioning anybody's honesty or integrity, but I will say that I think one other stipulation to being on the election board or a committee or any other agency of this town, if you're on that, you shouldn't be making disparaging remarks about other members of the town employment, council, committees, election board, or anything else. That's part of you're part of the team when you're part of a committee or the election board or the council, and you should be treating everybody else as your.
I will gladly step down.
Now, I'm not asking. I don't know if you should. That's it's consistent with the behavior of the others. Okay, I'm just saying that we have to appear squeaky clean, and if we appear to be a little bit favoring one side or the other, we're still going to get criticized.
Well, he's not running, Rick. That's one thing I'll say about Mrs. Miller. And if we have to construct an election board in this town of people who either don't dislike me or dislike Mr. Schaefer, we aren't going to have 10 people in this town to be on that election board. I think, though, as a guideline, that tonight's events have been maybe a little bit of a lesson where, you know, we'll ask members of the election board to simply refrain from, you know, any strong political comments in the future. But I don't think that this is not the first time that Mrs. Miller has gotten up and told the mayor exactly how she feels about him. So this is nothing new here. Okay, but again, she is not related to him. She is not related to the candidates. And I have total faith that when she gets up there to do her job as an election official, she will do it as impartially as anyone in this town could.
Well, I respectfully disagree, but Mrs. Miller took an oath on Thursday. Prior to that, she had every right to say whatever she wanted to say.
Okay, well, that wasn't made clear in the letter, and you are not a candidate for office.
Well, you want to play both sides.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
You know, you want to play both sides. You know, everything that you want to do is okay. I've sat here and listened to all of your accusations over the year. You know, the court has said there was no impropriety. The AG's office said there's no impropriety. You just keep slinging mud every meeting after meeting. I'm worried about protecting children from pedophiles.
Mr. Schaefer, that has nothing to do with
helping our senior citizens.
Mr. Schaefer, you're not campaigning.
I'm not, you know, all of this garbage every meeting.
I would like to make a motion at this point that the two members that are related to members of the council, Mr. Presley's sister, is it Mrs. Stiltmeyer? and Memphis Evans' sister-in-law both be requested to step down from their positions, and that those positions be filled by alternates, and that the roles be open to choose two new alternates to sit on our Board of Elections.
I second the motion.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Motion fails. Is there a motion to adjourn?
I want to
no.
I want to talk for a second. Yes. I think that the two people, Mr. Evans and Mr. Presley, should talk to their family members tomorrow. And ask them tomorrow if they would like to step down. I don't think we should have even had to do this. I think if there's a problem there, they should talk to them. Because Mr. Burritt and I didn't know that anyone was related to anyone when we voted on
neither did we.
Neither did I.
No, we didn't know, so I think those two people should go talk to them.
I think that's a good suggestion.
Well, then I'll make a second motion. I'll make the motion that should they talk to them and they choose to step down, that they be replaced immediately by the two people that have been already sworn and chosen as alternates, and that we then open the rolls to choose new alternates.
I'll second that one.
Well, you have should to do they it as soon as they resign. Then you open the rolls.
Immediately, yes. Yeah.
Immediately after you have... And that should be in writing to a written resignation.
Correct.
I need to get some clarity here. Did we say reopen this, or are we going to just go to the alternates?
Go to the alternates and then reopen it.
Reopen the rolls to choose two new alternates.
Two new alternates.
Correct. Okay. That is my motion.
Okay.
And as a matter of comment, I again want to say that I think it's critical that we do our level best to have at least two minority members serving on this committee when it's all said and done with.
I think that that is, again, when these people were brought up, I didn't know their race, and I really didn't care about their race because I think we're looking at integrity. The way it's constructed now, you know very well, Mr. Schaefer, that that isn't going to happen.
No, I don't. I disagree.
Meaning the alternates. I don't know what the race of the alternates is.
Well, at this point, we have a motion.
The rolls back up.
We have a motion on the table, and it's been seconded.
We're having discussion right now.
But the discussion is we already have appointed five people.
That's correct.
Plus two alternates.
No, we're going to ask two to resign.
We're going to ask two sitting people.
That's correct.
To resign.
And replace them with the alternates.
The two alternates that are now we need two alternates.
That's correct.
You're going to open that back up to anyone.
Mr. Hugg's going to ask for
anybody who likes to apply to be an alternate.
Correct.
Okay. All right.
That is my motion.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. Is there a motion to adjourn?
Any other council business at this point? Actually, I do have something.
There's no questions from Kay.
Actually,
I'm sorry,
Kay, this is not the time in the meeting for the public to speak. There is one other issue. We have a letter in our packet this week from Mr. Shields about David August FOIA request. And we note in the, I note in this that Mr. Hugg has made available, oh my God, I don't know how many documents, many emails in response to Mr. August FOIA request. Mr. J-Work's office is now going to have to review 769 emails, which Mr. Hugg indicates are personal emails and not subject to FOIA. And this obviously is going to run into a lot of time. Now, we've been dealing with Mr. August now since last November. We're not sure who he is. He's somebody from Clayton. He's never spoke to us. We get lots of letters from his attorney. But his purpose in doing this is causing an incredible amount of time and expense to Smyrna, sucking on our resources. He is responsible to pay for the copies of the documents. However, I believe all of Mr. J. Work's legal fees, Mr. J. Work, he gives us a cut rate discount on his legal time. However, it still comes to a substantial amount of money. And this is a very burdensome thing, and I just wonder if anybody on council would like to remark on why Mr. August is interested in the business of our town, or if anyone has any knowledge of this man and what his purpose in doing this is.
I agree. I think that part of FOIA should be an estimate, a good faith estimate, Mr. J. Work, on your legal fees as part of the cost of FOIA, because I mean, if we're FOIAing a, you know, a document like a building code or something or whatever, but every time we, I guess, a FOIA request comes in, Mr. Hugg, do you give it to Mr. Jaywerk to give us a legal opinion?
On every FOIA, no.
Okay. But based on your experience, you do, and then there's a cost incurred, and I think that we ought to put that in as an estimate in the total cost of FOIAing the town.
I think you could. I'm not sure this would stand up. At least the first step is you'd have to amend your FOIA policy to say that the town attorney's time.
I believe we did that at a council meeting ago or two ago.
Right.
We did amend it to.
So at least prospectively, we're covered. The time this came in, that was not in there. Now, I won't say it won't be challenged, but at least now we, by our own policy, we have the right to charge my time for new requests. But it wasn't there when this request was made.
Right, and I think, and the last time we brought up the name of Mr. August, I believe he was a Republican, and Mr. Schaefer admitted that he knew of him, and I, at that point, I think we invited him to come to our council meeting and just explain to us why he's doing what he's doing, just to give us an idea of, because, I mean, he's incurring some enormous costs, or could be incurring some enormous costs with the FOIA request.
He's also incurring some. He's paying for Mr. Hogue's time. He's paying for the copies. I think he's up to about $800 now, $600.
Has he paid that?
He's paid the deposit of $400 and some, and I sent a letter to Mr. Shields and said that he won't get the documents until the other $200 and some odd is coming.
Well, I think you ought to pay for your time as well. If you have to review 850 personal documents.
But my question was simply whether any member of this council can enlighten us as to why Mr. August is so interested in the business of Smyrna and in securing all these documents. Nobody? Thank you very much. Make a motion to adjourn. If there's no other business.
I'll make a motion to adjourn. Adjourn. Yeah.
Hopefully, whether you adjourn or not.
Okay. All right. Done.
Yeah, he seconded it.
I seconded it.
Sherman, I seconded it.
Yeah. Kale got him before me.
Yeah, he did.
Hey, Rick.
You can be an alternate.